Ken Dryden has joined us on Sports Byline. He's been inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, also the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. And he was a goalie for the Montreal Canadiens in the 1970s when the Canadiens dominated hockey, winning the Stanley Cup six times. He also played for Team Canada. He is a former federal member of parliament and a cabinet minister. And he is the author of some seven books, and he has been named one of the 100 greatest NHL players in history. You know, I've talked to a lot of players that have played in the National Hockey League and Canadian players as well. There is something about hockey in their DNA and in that country. Give me some insight to that, Ken.
Well, that's a good point. And it is something that is very close to Canadians. There is no doubt about it. I mean, I think it started with our climate. I mean, it started with ice and snow. It was something that we're going to find a way of playing in winter. I mean, that's, you know, every country finds a way of play and adapts to what they have. And so what we had was longer winters than most. And you can see it in northern European countries. I mean, they started ice skating, decades and centuries ago. They started, throwing rocks for curling in Scotland. We were going to create something, and the question was, what was it going to be? And as you mess around and you come up with something, and everybody has it's soccer. You find a rock and you kick it around. In hockey, it was you were going to kick around something in the winter. And then you get this device, that you can use a tree branch, and you knock it around. And then it just kind of evolves from that, and it becomes ingrained in a spirit. If you do live in longer winters, and if, a century or more ago, you were living outside during winters and spending a lot of time in the winter outside, then you would end up, creating these games, and then you start organizing them, and then you become good at them. And then with Canadians, we became the best. I mean, we were the originators. We had a head start. We became really good at it. We became proud of ourselves for being really good at it. And then you move into the mid-20th century in the arenas and all the rest. But then it becomes part of your part of the conversation, part of what you share between generations, part of the stories that you tell, part of what you write about, part of the broader culture, and so it just evolves and grows in that kind of way in all kinds of different dimensions.
Certainly, in the Dryden community, also in the family as well. Playing goalie was a tradition in that family. Your brother Dave also became an NHL goalie as well. When I read that, I was a little bit surprised, not because you both became goalies, but I wondered what it was like in a family to have two goalies that went on to play professionally.
Well, it was a surprise. I mean, that why we became goalies. The only real question is why my brother did. My brother Dave is 6 years older. I was going to do what he did. I mean, that I always wanted to do what he did. Being 6 years older, he could do everything that I wanted to do. He could throw a curveball, and I could never. My curveball was lousy. That if he was going to be a goalie, I wanted to try to do what he did. I think that there is a certain fascination about a goalie, the equipment that you wear, as if it is armor that you put on. There's something heroic about wearing it. There's something heroic about defending, risking, and doing something dangerous. So I think it's attractive in its first instance for a lot of people. then a lot of the non-attractions start to appear, and the puck hurts, and it's embarrassing to let in a goal, and people can hate you when you let in a goal, and you might not want the responsibility of being the last person in terms of doing something. But in the end, for us, and at least for me, and I think it's for my brother too, is I love the position. I mean, it's the most singular position, an individual position on a team, on a hockey team. But it's both, you're both immersed in the action, and you're also separate from it. And I've loved that in everything that I've done, of trying to understand whatever it is I'm doing. That writing a book about education, I went back to high school for a year and just sat in class every day to try to figure out what was going on, and who's a good learner, who isn't, who's and why, who's a good teacher, who isn't, and why. Writing about hockey, and the same thing. You're immersed in the action so you can experience it, but then you separate yourself from the action to try to make sense of it. And that's what that's what playing goal allows you to do. And I mean, it's like in baseball commentators are often usually, catchers or pitchers. In football, it's quarterbacks. Often, the commentators in hockey are goalies. They're the only ones who by nature of their position, sort of see the whole game, and they have to see the patterns of it, because their job is to interrupt the patterns, to break them down, to get in their way, to see that they don't succeed. So you've got to understand the game. You've got to see it as it's happening, and then respond to it. And I found it a very creative, interesting, challenging, and very rewarding position.
We have a little bit over 2 minutes left before we have to break here. And your interesting aspect of your life was the early part. You were drafted by the Bruins in 1964. Days later, Boston traded you onto the Canadiens. And you were told by your agent that you had been drafted by the Canadiens, and you really didn't find out about that until the middle 1970s, and that you had been drafted by the Bruins. And rather than play for the Canadiens in 64, you pursued a Bachelor of Arts degree in history at Cornell University, where you also played hockey until graduation, and you backstopped the Cornell Big Red to the 1967 NCAA championship, winning 76 of 81 varsity starts. When you reflect back on that, what stays with you as the most important aspect of those two statements I made?
Well, I loved my time at Cornell. Most everybody loves their college time, and I loved mine. I thought it was fantastic, and I loved the school. I loved the challenge of it in both regards, the academic side of it, the sports side of it, and it was a place that I was saying this, thinking this to, and saying it to somebody else today, of where that it was the first that I knew in going to Cornell that I was a good student for being a very good player, and I knew that I was a very good player for being a good student, but I didn't know I was a very good player on its own basis, or a real good student on its basis. And it was really at Cornell and through a coach in terms of hockey who believed I was a really good player, and of certain professors that I had who helped me understand that I was actually, as a student, I was a very good student. And so then once you have that sense of yourself, then you just start to fly, and that was Cornell for me.
And also about the fact that you were traded by Boston to the Canadiens, thinking at first
well,
it was the Canadiens that had drafted you.
Very, the draft was a very low-key thing at that time, and it was done in private by phone calls between the NHL teams and the NHL offices. And the way in which you were informed was not by the team that drafted you, but by the manager of the team that you were playing on. So I was playing Junior B hockey in Toronto, and our manager called me up, actually it wasn't even me, he called my father up, because I was 16 at the time. He called my father up and told me that I had been drafted by the Canadiens. And by that time, the trade had happened between the Bruins and the Canadiens. And so the call that our manager got was from Montreal, and saying that I had been drafted and I was with the Canadiens. And so I had always assumed that the draft itself, I had gone to Boston. And it literally was 10 years later, and maybe even a little longer. And it was by accident. I was sitting around the dressing room after practice one day, and one of the scouts came down and started talking, and he said something that made me wonder. And so then I asked him, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I was drafted by the Canadiens, right? And he said, "Oh no, by the Bruins. It was a prearranged trade, but you were drafted by the Bruins."
Again, Ken Dryden is with us, Hall of Fame goaltender, and also in the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline. Ken Dryden has joined us on Sports Byline. We're talking about not only his life, but also his Hall of Fame career in hockey. And as I mentioned, he's been named one of the 100 greatest players in NHL history. Let's talk about March 20th, 1971. Tell me about the lead up to that game. It was a home game, and it was against the Buffalo Sabres. Tell me about it.
Well, I had just been brought up by the Canadiens. I was playing in the American Hockey League. I had played two games, one game in Pittsburgh and then one in Montreal against Toronto. And we were playing the Buffalo Sabres on a Saturday night in Montreal. And my brother was a goalie for the Buffalo Sabres. And I remember our dad calling me up on probably Thursday night or so, saying, I've been thinking of coming down, and they were living in Toronto, coming to Montreal for the weekend. And I said, Dad, it's great. Come on down, but I have to tell you, I'm not playing. I mean, I know I'm not playing. I was told by our coach, Al McNeil, that I'm not playing. And so I know why you're coming, and I know it's a great reason to come. But if you're just going to be disappointed when you get here and I'm not playing, then that's not a very good reason to come. I think I'll come anyway. So he comes. And so the game, and this is Buffalo's first season, and they're already out of the playoffs. They're out of the, they'll not make the playoffs. And the coach and general manager of Buffalo at the time was a man named Punch Imlach, who had won Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 1960s. And he was always somebody who liked doing interesting things and the way he coached. And he was always, as newspaper guys would, he was good copy. And so he thought it would be a nice thing if my brother and I played against each other. Brothers had never played as opposition goalies in an NHL game. And so the opposing team, they have to submit their lineup first. So he submitted it with my brother in goal. And our coach, Al McNeil, does it with Rogge Vachon as the goalie. So the game begins. My brother is in the Buffalo net. Rogge Vachon is in the Canadiens net. I'm on the bench. Our father's in the stands. And at the first whistle, when you can make the first exchange of goalies, Punch Imlach, motions my brother to come out. A goalie named Joe Daly goes in. So it's Joe Daly in one end, Rogge Vachon on the other, and my brother and I on opposite benches watching the game. And that's the way it is and the way it's going to be. Early in the second period, Rogge goes down. Goalies go down. They get back up. He's not getting up. Finally, Al McNeil motions me to go in. And so I go into the Canadiens net. Imlach looks down at Joe Daly, motions him out. My brother goes into the Sabres net, and we play almost two periods against each other. And our dad was there. He took the chance, and he was there to watch it all. And it was, and then when the game was over, then you know the tradition in the NHL is when a season is over in the playoffs, the teams shake hands. But there's no such thing during the regular season. Well, my brother knew in a way that I never did, and I was only in my third game, and I would never have the right to do anything different from the tradition. The game's over. I'm going to be skating right off from the Canadiens' net, right to the opening in the boards, right into the dressing room. My brother is smart enough to say, no, the heck with NHL tradition. This is part of our family tradition. This is our story tonight. It's not the NHL story. And so he skated and positioned himself right in line between me as I was skating off the ice to the boards. I had my head down, and I didn't even know that he was there. And all of a sudden, I look up, and he's there, and we shook hands. And people who, you know, years and years and years later, they remember that as special for them. And it was really special for us.
Yeah, it really was, and I can just picture it in my mind how special it was, and it's lasting for you, and it's lasting for your family as well. You know, you win 6 Stanley Cup championships, but I'm sure when you were a young goalie, there was a moment when you said to yourself, I can play at this level. And obviously, from that point on, you were able to play exceptionally well. What was that moment? Do you remember it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there are actually two moments. And one of them came, and moments like this, it usually is a general and gradual feeling you have rather than an instant. But this instant was our sophomore year at Cornell. We were playing in the NCAA finals in Syracuse against Boston University. And I remember the warm-up. And I remember the warm-up so well, because when you start out as a goalie, at least at that time, the great pleasure of being a goalie is being able to catch the puck. I mean, I just love catching pucks. And so much so that I'd not only catch pucks that were on, catch with my left hand, so not just on the left side of me, but I'd put my hand over to the other side and catch them there. I'd catch them off the ice. I'd catch anything that I could possibly catch. At a certain point, it's not a great thing because it takes extra time to move from your glove that's, on the extreme left side over to your right side. And you really have to learn to stop a puck with your skate puck, stop it with your pad, stop it with your blocker. You've got to stop it with whatever is closest to the puck. And in this warm-up, before the final game against BU, all of a sudden it occurred to me that if the puck goes in one place, I'm stopping it with my blocker. I'm stopping it with my stick. I'm stopping it with my skate. I'm stopping it with my glove. I'm stopping it with my pad. I'm stopping it with whatever is closest to the puck. I have gone from being a kid with a good glove hand to a real goalie. And I had never felt that before. And then in terms of the NHL itself and where I felt that, that maybe I belonged. And this it wasn't quite as clear in a way, but it was in the first playoff game of that first year that I played, and I was sort of the surprise starter for the Canadiens against the Bruins, who had won the Cup the year before, overwhelmingly dominated that season, and were the huge favorite to win the Cup again. And the first game was in Boston. And it was like, oh, my God, what am I doing here? I've played 6 games. I'm a college kid. Everybody knew that Rogie Vachon was going to be playing and not me. And I'm out there, and it's Boston Garden. And I skate out onto the ice, and the game is going on. And everybody before that time had told me it's the playoffs. The playoffs are different. They're different. Doesn't matter what you've done before. The playoffs are different. You need experience. The atmosphere is different. Everything. The game goes on, and the Boston Garden is filled with screaming fans. And I realized we had played Eastern Finals in Boston Garden, playing against Boston University, Boston College, and others in Boston Garden, filled arena, screaming fans. The atmosphere feels the same. It's a playoff game, you know, against the Bruins. I mean, the stakes, you know, are so high. Well, you're out there, and the stakes don't feel any different than they did playing in an ECAC championship game. I mean, it's the playoffs. It's games you have to win. It's a season you're looking to win a championship in. It's something that you've done as a team all together. All of it is the same. It's not different. It's supposed to be different, but it's not different. And all of a sudden, it just sort of felt as if, no, actually, I feel like I'm not out of place on this ice.
Ken Dryden has been with us here. We've been talking about his life, his outstanding life, his professional career, Hall of Fame goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens, and played elsewhere in the National Hockey League as well. He won 6 Stanley Cup championships, also played for Team Canada. I want to thank you very much, Ken. It's been very meaningful to me, and I think all hockey fans are probably smiling right now having listened to you. Take care, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Ken Dryden is with us, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the fact that he has written a book about a great hockey man, Scotty Bowman, a hockey life like no other. We continue on Sports Byline. Ken Dryden has joined us on Sports Byline. He's been inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame and the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame, and Ken was a goalie for the Montreal Canadiens in the 1970s when the Canadiens dominated hockey, winning the Stanley Cup 6 different times. And I think it's safe to say there are only a handful of coaches who are iconic to their sport. And when it comes to hockey, the name that stands out is Coach Scotty Bowman. He started his NHL head coaching career with St. Louis in 1967. And when he finished in 2002, he had won 9 Stanley Cup championships, more than any other coach in the game's history. He won 5 titles with the Canadiens, 1 with Pittsburgh, 3 with Detroit, and he won 5 more titles as a player, coach, or executive. He holds the record for the most wins in league history with 1,244, and Ken Dryden has written a wonderful book called Scotty, A Hockey Life Like No Other. You know, that's a very strong statement, very true statement, but Ken, explain a little bit more about a hockey life like no other.
Well, Ron, in part, it's what you said about Scotty and all of his statistical milestones. But what makes his story even deeper than that is that he grew up in a part of Montreal called Verdun. And when Scotty was 14 years old and playing youth hockey in Montreal, he was signed by the Montreal Canadiens to play on one of their youth teams, and the perk that he got was a standing room pass to the Montreal Forum. So from age 14, he could take the 58 bus from Verdun up the Avenue Road or the Atwater Hill to the top to the Montreal Forum and watch the Montreal Canadiens, and they would play every Saturday night. And every Saturday night he could be there. No conflicts with school, no conflicts with his own schedule. And so he was literally there 30 times or so a season, plus the playoffs, and watching Maurice Richard in his peak years. He saw Gordie Howe arrive into the NHL as a 17-year-old. He watched the great Detroit teams of the late 40s and up to the mid-50s, also with Sawchuk and Ted Lindsay. He watched the Canadiens become the legendary Canadiens. They had only been a fairly ordinary NHL team up until the mid-1950s, and when the two Richards and Beliveau and Geoffrion and Moore and Jacques Plante, and they won 5 straight cups. And so he was there and up close and watching it. And then by the mid-1950s, he was becoming a coach with a junior team of the Montreal Canadiens. He became a head scout in Eastern Canada. And at that time, Every player in the NHL was Canadian, and most were from Eastern Canada. So he would have seen all of those players coming up as 13-year-olds, 14, 15-year-olds. Then he moves into the years that you describe, of where he starts in the NHL as a young assistant coach and assistant general manager with St. Louis, again, right at the beginning of the next era of the NHL, of the expansion era. And of what, you know, what it's like to put together an expansion team. How do you survive in a market that is not a hockey market at that particular time? Then moving into Montreal to the great teams, where he teamed with a general manager named Sam Pollock and winning all those cups. And then on and on, and as you described, Pittsburgh and for Buffalo, then Pittsburgh, then Detroit, and his final cup in 2002. But then, you know, at age 68, he retires from coaching, but he doesn't retire from hockey. And he stays on as an advisor to his son, Stan, who is the general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, during three more cups of the Blackhawks and right up to the present. Scotty's 86 years old. He lives half the year in Florida. And he goes to the home games of the Tampa Bay Lightning, watches the NHL Network. In the summer in Buffalo, he watches the development camps of USA Hockey, and he watches as this perpetually interested person, not somebody who knows it all, but somebody who as the real learner, is somebody who thinks that in the next thing that they see, it might be a little bit different from the last, that will get him thinking and thinking of something else and coming up with a new idea and a new approach. And that's what makes him fresh and, you know, timeless.
Ken, as a hockey man, Scotty, what's his greatest asset then over the course of his career?
I think that, you know, beyond the basics of somebody who is great, of really knowing a game and being immersed in it, is that Scotty is somebody who never got satisfied, never got complacent. As I was saying before about, you know, there's always the next game and you have to find an answer to the next game. Well, that's the way he has always been. And so we'd have these great teams in Montreal in the 1970s, but, you know, That's terrific. You know, we were great tonight. What about tomorrow? What about next week? What about the end of the year? There's always a way to win. There's always a way to lose. We got to find a way, you know, of winning, and never forgetting that, and never forgetting that what the players want most is to win, and so he could push. He could, you know, he could. In his own way, be intimidating. He wasn't a yeller. He wasn't a growler. Somebody who was, you know, a Vince Lombardi, bigger than life kind of character. But you knew exactly what was on his mind, and you could not impress him by doing something less than what you were.
One of my observations, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about this, on him, and when I talked to him for an hour-long interview, I came away with the belief he not only had that unique ability to evaluate talent, but he also had the ability to motivate that talent. Am I correct in that observation?
Yes. I mean, he knew the essence of every player and every player on a potentially great team. That player, you know, loves to have the big contract and loves to have a day off every so often and loves to have an arm around the shoulder. But what that player loves and needs more than anything is to win. And Scotty, you know, gave us a better chance of winning than any other coach, you know, would. And we knew that. I mean, about 10 years or so ago, when the TV series House, you know, Dr. House,
sure.
And when that went off the air, I decided to write an article, and I think I called it Gregory, Steve, and Scotty. And the Steve was Steve Jobs, the Gregory was Gregory House, and was Scotty, and comparing the three of them. And House, as you might remember, as your listeners might remember, was this really tough, hard character who was unforgiving of those that he worked with. He never an arm around the shoulder, always tough stuff. And why would somebody want to work with this guy? I mean, you know, that he can be so nasty. Steve Jobs, you know, the same kind of way in which he dealt with people, and with Scotty. But what all three of them knew was that, you know, the young doctors with House, people who worked at Apple, and the players of the Montreal Canadiens, is that, you know, that each of those people gave the, you know, those that worked for them the best chance of winning. If as a doctor, you were going to work on the most interesting cases, the most challenging cases, if you were around House. At Apple, as Steve Jobs would say, you're going to make the future. And so, you know, that all of them knew that those people that they wanted to have around them, that's what would drive them, is that chance to be the best.
Ken Dryden is with us, of course, Hall of Fame goaltender, playing with Montreal. He won 5 championships. He's written 7 books. This is his 7th book, and it's called Scotty, A Hockey Life Like No Other. One of the things I was impressed with and amazed with, and I think all the great people in sports, but also the great people who are coaches, I think of the late Bill Walsh, who I knew very, very well. They were able to do something that not everybody can do when they're in a particular area for a long period of time. How did Scotty Bowman stay contemporary in hockey for such a long time?
Because he never stopped watching, and he never. I mean, there's a phrase that I'm sure you've heard a lot, and I've heard a lot of "been there, done that," and people tend to use it as a phrase of sort of self-congratulation. Is that, look, I've been there, I've done that, as if I know, and because I know now, and I know forever. And Scotty has never been a been there, done that guy. He's always a being there, doing that guy, because he knows that tomorrow can be different from today, and there is something about tomorrow that he can learn from. Most of the experts that I've ever dealt with in any field, they love being an expert, and they love the fact that they know more about some field than anybody else, and they hold on to what it is they know, and they hold on to their status as an expert, you know, with this desperation. The problem is that what they know now is not all that is known beginning tomorrow and continuing to the day after. And they hold on to all of these things that they've known and they've learned because that's what has given them that expert status. And they run it into the ground until it doesn't work anymore. They're not the expert. They start losing, you know, in it. That's never been Scotty. I mean, I think his biggest accomplishment, it's not that he coached for 30-some years, but that his Stanley Cups, the 9 Cups, were 29 years apart. From 1973 was his first one, 2002 was his last one. And there are, there are not very many coaches that survive 29 years, but it's possible to survive, winning a few times and not winning other years, and it's fine. But to bookend it and to win continuously through that time, you have to adapt to all of the changes that happened. I mean, he started out with expansion. He started out with a league that was virtually 100% Canadian. He started out with salaries that were pretty modest, that weren't much more than the average salary of anybody not in sports. He ended up having to win when the league transformed to a game that included Europeans, is now, I think, about a third American, less than half Canadian, and a much, you know, more open style of game. He had to find answers all the way along. And the answers that he would have found in 1973, if he had tried to apply them, you know, in 2002, he'd be done. I mean, he wouldn't come close to winning. But he's a constant learner because he's a constant observer, a constant questioner, and that's just how he approaches everything.
We only have 30 seconds left, but what do you want people to take away from this book, Scotty, A Hockey Life Like No Other?
I think it really is just what I said in the last, you know, there, that you know, somebody who is really good at something, you need to be this perpetual learner. That what you knew yesterday is not enough for today, and to be willing to give up what you knew yesterday if, in fact, there is something different about today.
Ken Dryden with us. Ken, thank you very much. This is a wonderful book. It's so good that I'm going to make it a selection of the month on Sports Byline USA Book Corner. I hope that everybody will check this out. It's about a very special man, a very talented man as well, and the iconic name that is associated certainly with professional hockey. I'm talking about Scotty Bowman. The book is called A Hockey Life Like No Other. And Ken Dryden, the Hall of Fame goalie in the National Hockey League and also the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame as well, is the author of this book. So again, I hope everybody will check it out. We continue across the country and around the world. It's good to have you with us on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.